Live from the College of Communication, Arts, and Sciences at Michigan State University, it is now time to go beyond the X's and the O's with WKAR's Current Sports.
You want to go after an athlete, one of my athletes, come after me. I'm a man. I'm 40.
My style is impetuous. My defense is impregnable.
Well, I'm the best corner in the game. When you try me with a star receiver like Crabtree, that's the result you're going to get.
Yes, did I express to them I was mad? I was furious. Just furious.
I know my wife will at least shot fake one time.
We're talking about practice, not a game.
And I told our players, you need to be more like a dog. We don't need a bunch of cats in here. Yeah, looking in the mirror. Do I look good? I got my extra bands on. I got my other shoes on. Be a dog. We don't need no meows. We don't need no cat.
Here's your host, L. Martin.
Beautiful people, welcome to this Thursday edition of WKAR's Current Sports. It is actually April Fool's Day. That's right, April Fool's Day, folks. April 1st, 2021. I hope you all are having a fantastic April Fool's Day out there and haven't been getting pranked too bad. All right, you know, that's the thing about this day. You just always have to have your head on a swivel. You always have to have like that blinking yellow light on, right? Because somebody's trying to get you, all right? I know that I used to have a lot of fun with this day back in high school for sure, you know, pulling pranks on my family. And I saw a really funny video. And actually, I think this video was recorded last year during April Fool's Day, but a father recorded his three young daughters as they were outside with their backpacks and jackets on. And, you know, it was the year, really, this time last year, the pandemic, what was still very new to us, right? And schools were slowly but surely saying, don't come in. You know, we're going to have you guys work from home virtually. But this father, you know, he said, it's back to school for you guys. And they were outside waiting, and then the father is just like, hey, guys, what day is it? And they just kind of look at each other like, I don't know. But April, then one of the youngest ones says, it's three girls. One of the youngest ones says April 1st, and then the oldest one is like, Dad, really? Oh, man, that's a funny video. It's been shared a lot throughout the day on Instagram, I saw. But, hey, keep your head on the swivel, all right? Don't get got. It is April Fool's Day, all right? Keep that in mind. but, man, on today's Current Sports, later on this hour, I want you all to hear what Mel Tucker had to say as the Michigan State football program inches closer and closer to the spring football game, which I can't believe, man, that it's already spring. I feel like these days just absolutely fly by. But, you know, so that means that spring practice is, you know, in full go right now for the football program. And Mel Tucker is being made available to us on a weekly basis now. And he held a press conference this week that I want you guys to hear, as he has an update as to what's happening throughout spring football. But before I get to that, yo, we have to tip our cap to the Michigan basketball team. Even though they got eliminated by UCLA, I do want to make some points concerning just how special of a season this was for Juwan Howard and the Wolverines, and what was Juwan's first run in the Big Dance. Incredible, right? To get to an Elite Eight appearance in your first run of the Big Dance. Even though, man, the Final Four was pretty much teed up for you, right? You taking on an 11 seed, a team that had to go through a play-in game to even make the tournament. And it just looked like, you know, a lot of people thought it was a shoe-in for Michigan to win that game and go and play the big dog of college basketball. And they have been the big dog throughout the entire season of college basketball. That dog being the Gonzaga powerhouse that they are. They literally the dog of the college basketball season, the Gonzaga Bulldogs, folks. But we thought we could possibly see a matchup there, but that didn't happen as UCLA spoiled that party. But before I move forward, I would be remiss if I didn't mention this, baseball fans. Today is opening day for the Detroit Tigers. How about that? That's right. Baseball fans are rejoicing today. And the Detroit Tigers are actually opening up the season as I speak right now at 1:10 p.m., a 1:10 first pitch today against the Cleveland Indians at Comerica Park. So those who are out there celebrating, those who decided to play hickey, right, and head down to Detroit, and you know, possibly head to the game or hang out around Comerica Park, doing it safely, of course. All right, we are still in the midst of a pandemic. Happy opening day to you guys, though, as Matt Boyd takes the mound for his second consecutive opener, and he's squaring off with Shane Bieber, who is coming off a Cy Young campaign in the shortened year that was 2020. But, you know, there are so many new players in spring camp due to free agency and also prospect promotions. There have been a lot of questions surrounding the Tigers starting lineup. And just to give you guys a peek into how it looks, at least right now in the first regular season game under manager AJ Hinch, this is how it looks. Leading off, you've got Robbie Grossman, left fielder, Jahmyr Candelario, third baseman, Willie Castro at the three spot. Let's see here, Miguel Cabrera, your first baseman, Jonathan Shoup, second baseman, Nomar Mazara is your designated hitter, Wilson Ramos is your catcher, Victor Reyes in right field, and Jacoby Jones in center field. So that's what the Detroit Tigers lineup looks like right now. Really no surprise to see Grossman at the top. He's got a career 350 on-base percentage, 7 walks in spring training. He's an obvious leadoff choice, in my opinion. Even though he appeared to be a reserve outfielder, Reyes gets that start, opening day start, as Mazara shifts to DH. And with Jones in center, two-thirds of the outfield looks really the same as last season. So the infield is a very different story, though. Cabrera's lobbying to play more first base is already paying off, as he'll be on the diamond a few times per week. That's what A.J. Hinch said, at least. And I'm curious to know just how much Miggy still has in the tank. He's still banking in, man, even though his production over the years, year after year, has declined. But you've got Shoup. He's back for another year at second base. He'll form an everyday tandem with Castro up the middle. So we'll see what happens there. Candelario, he moves back across the diamond to third base. That's his preferred position. He spent most of last year at first base following CJ Krohn's injury. So Ramos, who signed a one-year deal via free agency, again, he gets the nod behind the dish. He'll be there more often than not. So, you know, I was asked on Jack Ebling's press pass television show on Sunday, you know, to make a prediction on just how good this Detroit Tigers team will be. I still think this Detroit Tigers team is going to be trash. I have to be completely honest with you guys. I still believe that this team is in rebuild mode, and it's going to take at least 5 years for them to get back into any kind of playoff conversation. So I went very low. I went 65 wins. That's where I see this. that's where I see this Detroit Tigers team right now. 65. I am setting the bar very, very low. But what say you? You know, opening day feels good to have baseball back. And, you know, at least right now, We'll have some fans in the stands at limited capacity due to the COVID-19 pandemic. But, you know, there's nothing like the at-game experience of being in the stands at a baseball game. Just the atmosphere of it, you know, the smell of hot dogs and popcorn, you know, just sitting out there with your sunglasses on and a baseball cap and your catcher's mitt hoping to catch a fly ball or three, right? there's nothing that you can compare to the being at the at-game experience of baseball, too. You just can't. Pretty awesome stuff. And here in Mid-Michigan, of course, the Lansing Lugnuts will be at it very, very soon. So just feels good to have baseball back, and happy opening day to you all. Also, want to push along this news to you guys. Big news coming out of the college basketball world as North Carolina icon Roy Williams, folks. That's right, the Roy Williams, who led North Carolina to 3 NCAA titles in 33 seasons as a college basketball head coach. He is retiring today. How about that? 33 seasons, a legend out in North Carolina, a basketball icon when you talk about college hoops. Roy Williams retiring at the age of 70. Man, and in all told, I mean, we're talking about a 48-year coaching career. So he's going to have a press conference about 2 hours after we get off the airwaves today. That press conference is scheduled for 4 p.m., and he's going to address the media to talk about why he has decided to step down and retire at the age of 70. And he has spent 18 seasons at North Carolina, going 485-163. Again, leading the Tar Heels to those 3 national titles in 05, 09, and about, 4 years ago, back in 2017. So, pretty amazing, man. He also coached the Kansas Jayhawks, if you remember, for 15 seasons, taking them to Final Four appearances prior to leaving for his alma mater. So, and UNC lost to Wisconsin in the first round of the NCAA tournament in his final game, which was Williams' only first-round loss in 30 tournaments. So, yeah, he's a Hall of Famer, man, and, you know, he has coached some amazing, amazing players, you know, during his time as the head coach at North Carolina. And he's going to be missed. You know, it's going to be weird watching a North Carolina Tar Heels game and not seeing Roy Williams on the sideline donning one of his great plaid blazers and North Carolina blue tie. So, yeah, man, an absolute legend deciding to step down and call it a career. And I think that, you know, when you get up in age, when you hit, you know, the 70s, you really start reflecting on life, and you start thinking about, you know, your years moving forward as you have more years in back of you than you have moving forward. And, you know, you start to just reevaluate things, and you start to ask yourself, okay, what is truly important in life right now? And I think I'm just guessing here, and we'll find out more at 4 p.m. when he addresses the media. But, you know, I'm just guessing here that at 70 years old and accomplished everything that he's accomplished in the world of basketball, you know, he wants to maybe focus on his family, spend more time with them. Because let's be real, man, as a Division I basketball coach, you miss a lot of moments in life, don't you? You miss a lot of them. Tom Izzo has talked about that numerous times. You miss a lot of holidays. You miss a lot of birthdays. You miss a lot of, you know, high school games, you know, for your kids, man. It's really bittersweet because you're living out your dream. But if you want to be great at anything, there is a sacrifice that must happen. And for a lot of the individuals who are exceptional at their craft in the public eye, family life isn't the best because they sacrifice that time to the craft, to the job. Izzo has talked a lot about that. And, you know, that's something that, you know, you hear a lot of just, you know, a lot of people in other fields as well touch on, you know, actors and actresses, you know, athletes, of course, you know, just so many people, man, out there who are trying to do something great in life. There is some give and take there, without a doubt. But congrats on a career for UNC icon Roy Williams. Well, before I get to some spring ball for Michigan State football, and before you get to hear from Mel Tucker as he addressed the media this week, from Roy Williams, whose career is ending in college hoops coaching, to Juwan Howard, whose career is just getting started in college hoops coaching, head coach of the Michigan Wolverines, just now completing his first Big Dance, his first NCAA tournament appearance. And I must say, and I think all of you will agree, that was one heck of a first run, wasn't it? Taking the Wolverines all the way to the eliteness of eight. Pretty special, I gotta say. So in saying that, I want to keep it all the way 1,000, though. And, you know, you got to always say, man, as a fan base, you got to hold your team accountable. I saw a lot of, yay, great year. We had a great year. Nobody expected us to get this far. We'll take it. I saw a lot of that from Michigan Wolverines fans yesterday. And a lot of denying, though, a lot of denying the fact that the Final Four was teed up for you. It really was. Michigan playing so well, especially when you look at those wins against LSU and against Florida State. This is a Michigan team that came into that game against UCLA with a golden opportunity. It is not often when you have a road that carved out so beautifully to a Final Four. Final Fours are not easy to get to, which is why programs actually hang banners for Final Fours. They are so tough to out of 68 teams, to be one of four teams left in college basketball is very remarkable. In a single game elimination tournament, that is something special. That's why they hang banners for these things, because it is so hard to get to. And you're a number one seed who had been playing so well throughout the tournament, and you're playing an 11 seed in UCLA that barely made the tournament, had to beat our beloved Michigan State Spartans in a play-in game. That can't happen, right? And I think that Juwan and his players are going to look back at this year and say, man, I wish we could go back and tip that ball up again. And that's the thing about March Madness, man. You get one shot, man. You get one opportunity. I sound like Eminem from 8 Mile right now, right? but that's how it is. You know, the NCAA tournament, success in the NCAA tournament is so fragile that you can't have an off game. You can't have a bad game. And that's what Michigan had. In a game where really, when you look at the numbers, it was just Johnny Juzang offensively that torched Michigan. If you contain Johnny Juzang, which obviously is easier said than done, then you probably win that game. But on the flip side, the thing about Michigan was, you know, they shot so bad. Michigan shot so bad, they couldn't get anything consistent from the guards. You know, they did a good job of feeding the ball to Hunter Dickinson. And, you know, especially coming out the gates in that second half, the game plan was very, very clear. It was get the ball to Dickinson and everybody else. Just get out the way, man. Get out the way. And Hunter Dickinson started to do work. And especially when you saw Riley foul out for UCLA, you know, Cody Riley is the guy down low for UCLA. When he fouled out, I really thought Michigan was going to continue to attack that weakness down low, but they didn't. But also, when Johnny Juzang sprained his ankle, when he twisted that thing, and he's had problems with that right ankle, you know, dating back to the Michigan State game, really, you really felt like Michigan was going to just tighten that grip and pull away. Had that feeling. But Michigan didn't take advantage of it. And, you know, Johnny Juzang, my goodness, he went off for 28 points. The second leading scorer for the Bruins was actually Tiger Campbell, who was solid. I mean, he shot 50% from the field. He definitely out-dueled Zach Smith. I told you when previewing this game earlier in the week that the matchup I was really intrigued and locked in to watch was Mike Smith versus Tiger Campbell. And Tiger Campbell won that battle. You know, Mike Smith just shot so bad. You know, he had that 1 3-pointer. You know, he went 1 for 3 from deep, and he had that 1 3-pointer that actually gave Michigan the lead. I think it was around like the 5 to 7 mark, somewhere around there. And I'm like, look, and I tweeted out, this dude hadn't hit a three all game, and he hits one to give Michigan the lead there. And you just felt like the momentum was going to shift there, but it didn't. Give UCLA a lot of credit because they may have been in the play-in game against Michigan State, and it's remarkable. This, you know, looking at this team now that's in the Final Four and in the Bruins, you know, you got to feel a little bit better as Michigan State fans. You know, the fact that you pushed a Final Four bound team to an overtime loss, in which you lost, of course, still remarkable. Because this team is now in the Final Four, and you lost to them in the play-in game, which shows that maybe the committee got the seeding a little bit wrong this year, right? Oh, boy. UCLA is just, gosh, just clicking at just the right time, and that's what the tournament is about as well. Can you surge at just the right time? And Johnny Juzang, a former Kentucky recruit, you see why he was a former Kentucky recruit. He can score so well. And when Michigan tried to pull away in that first half, Johnny Juzang, time and time again, hit big bucket after big bucket after big bucket. 28 points for him. Tiger Campbell was the second leading scorer with just 11. And then the other guys, I mean, you had Riley with 4. Jaime Jaquez Jr., who had been brilliant until this game, offensively, he only had 4 points. If you told me that Jaime Jaquez was going to score 4 points, I would have taken Michigan all day in that game. If you told me that beforehand without giving me the final score, I would have said, oh, Michigan wins this game. But Johnny Juzang going off for 28, Tiger Campbell with 11, and then you had Bernard with 4, who was just 2 of 10. I mean, really just two guys that beat you, primarily Juzang, but Tiger contributed as well, shooting 50% from the floor. No bench points. That's what's remarkable. No bench points for UCLA. You really let one man beat you. And also, UCLA shot so bad from deep, but so did Michigan. UCLA shot 3 of 13 from the three-point line. That's 23%, folks. Michigan shot 3 of 11 from deep, 27%. Goodness. The leading scorer for Michigan was Hunter Dickinson, who had 11 points. Second leading scorer was Eli Brooks, who had 8. But, man, you know, when it gets hot in the kitchen, you really start to see who the master chefs are, right? Big players make big-time plays in big moments, and Michigan didn't have that. And I really, you know, I just thought about Isaiah Liver, seeing him on the sidelines cheering for his teammates, all fine and dandy. But I couldn't help but think that, okay, if Isaiah Livers is in the game, maybe he hits one of those numerous opportunities that could have given Michigan the lead and could have shifted things in this game. I could not help but think about that. Because you had Franz Wagner throwing up a critical air ball three-pointer in crunch time. You had Zach Smith throwing up a three-pointer that clanks off the iron right in front of the grill of Tiger Campbell. You had Eli Brooks with a point-blank layup off of a miss, and he just misses it. I mean, Michigan had opportunities to win this game, and Isaiah Livers, being the big-time player that he is, if he's in one of those moments, I couldn't help but think that Isaiah Livers hits at least one of those shots. So this proved to be the game for me in which his absence, it really showed. Really, really showed. And Michigan goes home. Golden opportunity. A one seed in Michigan losing to an 11 seed play-in team in the UCLA Bruins. That is the epitome of the madness that is March. That's how fragile bad play is in March around this time of the year. Hats off, though. You know, the Wolverines really shocked a lot of people, including myself. I mentioned how, at the beginning of the week, this maturation process, a lot of players grew up throughout this tournament and stepped up knowing that their best player, and Isaiah Livers, was not going to be available. They stepped up, man. And this is a team that is going to be they're going to be fine because they're led by Juwan Howard, who is proving that he is a factor in this conference. Also, I want to give a shout-out to Sean D. Brown as well. You know, I thought Sean D. Brown, man, he had some opportunities as well. They should have gotten him the ball more because he shot pretty good throughout this tournament. He finished with 8 points. He was 2 of 3 from deep. Just a fun player to watch, man. I like watching Sean D. Brown play. Brandon Johns, he grew up as well. You know, really cool seeing the Lansing kid who I remember, you know, covering in high school not long ago, seeing him do what he did throughout the tournament. And also to comment too on the Mike Smith jumper, because the three pointer, because I really thought that Juwan Howard got a little greedy in that moment. I think he was gunning for the three, or old Zach Smith wouldn't have taken that shot. He was going for the win. They were down by two, and on that play, you have Tiger Campbell on the back of his heels. He's backpedaling. Why not take him to the rack to try and tie the game? That's an easier shot. That's a higher percentage shot than that three-pointer you threw up. That's not what Michigan does. Go to the rack there. You know, you got him backpedaling. Go to the rack. Get fouled and try and tie the game from the line. Or you possibly have a chance for an and one, in which if you convert on the layup, then you could go to the line and possibly give your team the lead. I taking the three there, that's not what Mike Smith does. He's not Steph Curry. Pulling up the way he pulled up there. Now, again, it's one of those things where if he makes it, hooray, throw a parade, right? And Juwan Howard looks like a genius. But if he misses it, I'm sitting here saying what I'm saying right now. But I'm always in favor. Look, man, if you're down two and you still got some time on the clock, look, in a situation like that, it wasn't a bad look. It was not a bad look. I'm not saying that. But, man, if he takes it to the rack for a higher percentage shot, I don't know. We may be having a different conversation here on this Thursday. So, but, hey, props to Michigan. They fall by 2 points in this game, but one heck of a year. In discussion for Coach of the Year, look, I think they're going to give it to Mark Few because, you know, I think Gonzaga is going to go all the way and do something they haven't done in a long, long time. And this Gonzaga team may be the greatest college basketball team of all time if they get the job done. And they're going to give Coach of the Year to Mark Few, I believe. But, you know, Juwan Howard is in that conversation. He really is. Juwan Howard, to do what he did throughout this tournament, he is in the conversation for National Coach of the Year. And, you know, definitely deserved to be Big Ten Coach of the Year. And again, Juwan Howard is very, very smart because he surrounded himself with a coaching staff that is going to elevate him. And the most important guy, I think, on that assistant coaching staff is Phil Martelli. No question about it. Here's a bit of what Juwan Howard had to say after that tough loss to the UCLA Bruins that could have booked them a ticket to the Final Four.
Very disappointing loss to end our season this way. I give a lot of credit to the UCLA Bruins, the head coach, players, for, you know, fighting hard to earn the victory to advance to the Final Four. It's very disappointing for our guys, working extremely hard this year, coming down to, you know, one possession. And that's how it goes sometimes. In a game of basketball, there's one or two possessions that can really either help you or hurt you. And for us, you know, we came up short. But I'm so proud of this group and how they competed all season long during some very difficult times. It's a very challenging year. But at the end of the day, we all need to walk out of this building with our head up, with nothing but humility, gratitude, and dignity.
All right. We will now go to questions from the media. Please use the raise hand function to indicate you would like to ask a question. Our first question will come from Andrew Kahn.
Hey, Juwan, can you hear me okay?
Yes, I can.
All right, thank you. You talked a lot about April 6th, you know, being the last team standing. Obviously, that didn't happen, but you won a Big Ten title. You did a lot of good things. I know you just touched on it a little bit, but I guess, you know, what is the message to the team when they're probably heartbroken, but, you know, you had a good year?
The message is, you know, we should be very proud of each and every one of them on how they have sacrificed, worked extremely hard throughout the year, back in June, and making all this work. There are a lot of folks that deserve a lot of credit that is outside of this team that really bred a lot of life into the group. But at the end of the day, we learn from this. We will grow from it. And definitely we all will get better, starting with me first.
Our next question comes from Steve Kornacki.
Hi, Juwan. A lot of times in a locker room situation after a tough game like this, one of your seniors or one of your captains will step up and say something that really touches you or touches the team. Could you share anything like that maybe one of your guys shared with the team?
Well, to be honest with you, our locker room is what is said is basically stays in the locker room. And, you know, it's just a very disappointing game. And the emotions right now is not where, you know, like the other locker room at all-time high. But just want to say this, that, you know, I'm so proud of our group and how they fought so hard, not only in this ball game, but all season long.
Our next question comes from Brendan Quinn.
Hey, Juwan, wonder if you can just walk through those last two timeouts, the plays that you drew up, and then what you ended up seeing kind of play out.
Yes. You know, we got the look, got the shot that we wanted. Unfortunately, you know, it's not much you can do with 0.5, but that shot, it was a nice little heave. Unfortunately, it just didn't go in. The play before that, we got an open look. It just fell short. But overall, I love the fact how our guys executed down the stretch. Yeah, you know, both teams missed some shots that we normally make. If you look at the shooting percentage, you know, there was truly a Big Ten style of play with 51-49. And with UCLA shooting 38.9, which is 39%, and Michigan shooting 39% from the field. They shot 23% from three. We shot 27%. Fortunately enough for them, they were 6-for-7 from the free throw line. We were 6-for-11. So we missed 5 free throws. They got 7 offensive rebounds. We got 11. They got 8 turnovers. Unfortunately for us, we have 14. You know, reading that out to you guys, that was, you know, the difference of the ball game. But it was a hard-fought game.
All right, that was Juwan Howard, head coach of the Michigan basketball team. Salute to the Wolverines for a great season. But, man, oh, man, did you have an opportunity to go to a Final Four right there handed to you. All right, let's hit our first break. When we come back, we'll talk some Michigan State spring football, and you'll hear what head coach of the Michigan State football team, Mel Tucker, had to say during this week's media availability. We'll be right back. You are listening to the April Fool's Day edition of WKAR's Current Sports. Welcome back to WKAR's Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin, and spring practice is live and in full effect. And Mel Tucker, now approaching his second season as the head man in charge of the Michigan State football program, he was made available to us media members this week. And here's a bit of what Mel Tucker had to say about Michigan State and the preparation that is spring football.
Saturday will be your first scrimmage, right?
Yeah, it'll be the first one, yes. First scrimmage.
Right. So you touched on the first 4 practices. I guess, is there any area where you guys are ahead of where you thought you might be at this point, and maybe somewhere where you feel like you need to spend a little more time focusing?
I'll tell you what, our special teams work has been very good. The technique and fundamentals, working on punt, just the entire operation and the efficiency of the drills, the understanding of what we need to get done, how we need to do it. We're improved in that area. We're moving in the right direction. We still need to learn how to practice. We have too many guys on the ground. We talk about it. We talk about it all the time. When we're not scrimmaging, no one should be on the ground. And that's how guys get hurt. You can't make plays when you're on the ground. It's just a bad look for us. We had less guys on the ground today. But just the practice etiquette, you know, how we work, you know, practice like a pro, stay up, you know, get your work in, focus on technique and fundamentals, have a good base, you know, play with good pad level, have great balance and body control, have contact balance, you know, stay on your feet and play through the whistle. And we really need to get better in terms of staying off the ground. That's one thing I can't stand that.
And as far as, I guess, when you look at bringing in a grad transfer at QB, where you were last year the 4 days of fall camp or whatever you had as far as splitting reps, I guess, where are you at with that? And when you have 5 scholarship guys on the roster and obviously, like you said last week, an open competition.
Yeah, it's great competition. The guys are pushing each other to get better. It's a good room. The guys are working hard. Coach Johnson does a heck of a job with those quarterbacks. And I'm just looking forward to how we end up, you know, what can we become at that position? Competition is good.
Thanks, Mel.
Yep, you're welcome. Thanks, Matt.
Our next question will go to Lindsey Huddleston.
Hey, Mel, looking back over your pro experience, I look at those helmets in the back. I bet if someone would have said portal to you, you would have had no idea what they were talking about. Now, have you started to develop any portal principles about how these guys are coming in, what you have to be thinking of, what you have to be mindful of? Because it just seems to be an ongoing topic, maybe in our world, not necessarily yours, but it just seems to be something that's a lot is going on with it.
Yeah, the portal is here to stay, and we embrace it. It's part of our process of acquiring players. Everyone's in the portal for different reasons. And so you have to do your homework. We have to make sure that the guys that we decide that we want are a great fit for our culture. They feel needs on the field, but obviously they need to fit in off the field as well. You know, academically, you know, socially, we're looking for good teammates, guys that are unselfish and guys that love football. But, you know, the portal is, it means different things to different people. And, you know, what the portal does for us is that, you know, when we evaluate players out of high school, either they're what we want for our program or they're not. And we don't need to reach for guys. Now, if we're not convicted on a player coming out of high school, then we won't take them. And so that makes sure that we feel great about the guys that we're recruiting from the high school ranks. We want to build our team through the high school ranks, but we will supplement our roster and complement our roster with guys from the portal, whether they're grad transfers or they're undergrad transfers. But we have to make sure that we're not just collecting players, but we're building a team. And that's where the fit comes in. No, we don't have to reach. We know that there'll be players in the portal, and we'll use the portal to complement our high school guys, and we'll build our team that way.
Great. Thank you.
Yep. Thank you, Lindsay.
Next question will go to Stephen Brooks with 24/7 Sports.
Hey, Mel. Hope you're doing well. I remember last time you said, well, you've said it a couple of times, you want your QB to be the number one competitor on the team. Curious how you've seen Anthony Russo in that regard. I know he's been involved in quite a few QB competitions, whether it was at Temple or even back to high school. So when you just curious about his competitiveness, what you've noticed from him there?
Oh, he competes. He competes. And they all compete. Like I said, it's a good room. They work well together. They take coaching. I can tell that he's becoming more comfortable with our scheme and more comfortable with our coaching and just being in our program. So as that happens, he's going to play faster. He's going to play with more confidence. But from a competition standpoint, there's no question about that. He competes.
I also wanted to ask you about Kenneth Walker, if I could. Obviously, you see him, you see his highlights in film, you get him through the portal. Now that you've had him for a couple of days and a couple of days in pads, is he basically the guy that you thought you were getting and just sort of your early reviews of him?
Yeah, he's the same guy that we saw on tape. And, you know, he gives great effort. He's strong. He's got great quickness. He has balance and body control. He can change direction. He can run through the smoke. He's got good hands. You know, he's a tireless worker. I haven't seen him loaf. I haven't seen him loaf one time in a drill or in group work and teamwork. You know, every rep he takes, he makes the most of it. I'm glad we have him.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
Our next question is from Raider Saban with the Detroit Free Press.
Hey, Mel, when you are looking at the running game and did the self-scouting of the running game last year, what were the issues that you saw and where do you think you can stand to make the greatest improvement?
Well, it starts up front with the offensive line. We need to get stronger, have to become more physical. Our technique has improved. Just our understanding of what is the job that I have to do? How do I do it? And why is it important to get it done a certain way? And that's critical. Our tight ends are a big part of our run game, and so we need to get stronger there at the point of attack with those guys. Understand? I mean, no block, no rock. I mean, you got to get your hands inside. Get a flat back and some hat speed and get in the guys and move guys. And then the runners have to hit the hole, understand where the power of the play is, and get there and run with authority and run with power, keeping the ball high and tight and get yards after contact. And when you have good backs, you know, the play doesn't have to be blocked perfectly every time. Guys can make guys miss and make something happen, make the O-line better. So mostly it's just a collective it's a collective effort. And like I talked to the receivers today, I mean, again, you know, you don't, no block, no rock, no, your receivers, the toughness of your team, you can tell the toughness of your team by how your receivers block and how your corners tackle. So, you know, just, we all need to get better. The run game was not nearly good enough. We all know that. I mean, I think, putrid might've been a word that could be used. And so it is what it is. We need to get better. We can't run the ball on our terms. We can't be good teams. We just can't do it. We need to be able to run the ball when we want to run it, and when we want to run it. And that's going to take everyone. And so we have a sense of urgency in our run game. I expect our run game to be much better this season. But you know, it's one day at a time. Right now, spring ball, we're getting there. We're getting better.
Nick Saban recently said, and he said it a couple times, that basically the game's changed to the point that you basically have to outscore the other team. How much has your philosophy changed in that regard with the way you look at offense and also even defense and how it all kind of works together in this age of college football?
You know, defensively, if they can't score, then they can't win. And so you want to hold teams to low numbers. And offensively, you know, you need to possess the ball and control the field position and score points. And that's the bottom line. I mean, the game really hasn't really changed, you know, that much in that regard. On defense, you need to stop people and get the ball back.
All right, again, Mel Tucker, head coach of the Michigan State football program, touching on many different areas there as Michigan State is practicing throughout spring ball. And, you know, one of the most intriguing things that I'll be watching for sure this upcoming year for Michigan State is the fact that, you know, the Spartans are returning six players on that defensive line, including two seniors coming back for an extra year in 2021 with Drew Beasley and also Jacob Panishuk. And that should pay off huge. I really think that defensive line is going to wreak some havoc on Big Ten teams this upcoming season, folks. All right, we'll hit our final break. When we come back, I'll put a bow on this Thursday, April 1st, April Fool's Day edition of WKAR's Current Sports. All right, welcome back to WKAR's Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin. We are out of time, folks. Time flies when you're having fun, and we certainly have been having a lot of fun on today's Current Sports. You know, I'm getting some tweets here from some people asking me who I believe is going to win this weekend in the Final Four. Well, you got in both of these games are slated to take place on Saturday, and one at 5 and then one at around 8:30. But you've got Houston and Baylor, and then you've got UCLA and Gonzaga. I think at the end of the day, even though I really like this Houston team, I think that the Cougars have been very, very good this season. I think that Baylor and Gonzaga are going to be your two teams competing for a national championship, folks. And I had a feeling it was going to come down to this. I've been saying all college hoop year that it's Gonzaga, Baylor, and then everybody else. And that is that's going to be a heavyweight matchup that I cannot wait to see. Baylor is a 5-point favorite against Houston, and Gonzaga is a 14-point favorite against UCLA. You know, wouldn't it be remarkable, just to think, just a little bit here, just for a moment, just dream a little bit. What if the Bruins were to beat Gonzaga? That would be one of the biggest upsets in college hoops history. Gonzaga's 30-0. And again, people are talking about this team as possibly the greatest college basketball team to ever lace them up. They're in that conversation, folks. Jalen Suggs, oh man, this young man, I can't speak higher of him than what other analysts have already said. I mean, this kid is amazing. Yeah, I think it's going to be the Gonzaga and Baylor going at it. That's just my thoughts on that. What say you though? 517-355-WKAR. You can call us and leave us a voicemail at that number. Weigh in anywhere on our Facebook page at facebook.com/WKAR News. You can tweet me directly at Al Martin WKAR or tweet the show at WKAR News. We are out of time. We'll be back at it on the Friday edition of Current Sports. We'll further preview the Final Four in the men's college basketball tournament. I'll also have thoughts on the women's college basketball tournament because tomorrow we'll have the Final Four in the women's college hoop tournament as South Carolina will take on number one Stanford, two number one seeds there. And then Arizona 3-seed Arizona taking on 1-seed UConn. So, yeah, man, you know, those are also some great, great matchups. So we'll talk that. Also, I want to comment on the whole Tiger Woods car crash news that, you know, detectives are not going to release the cause of that accident and what it may say about the accident. I'll touch upon that and so much more on Friday. Until then, we are on a 23-hour break. I want you all to be smart, be safe, and as always, be easy, people.